I mean, I think this is one of those cases where what's going on is it's not a macroeconomic dynamic. And I think that's a very important, it's important framing because it helps you understand whether you have edge. I want to be clear. I have no edge in telling you what is going to happen with the straight data formula. No, literally not. And I can tell you if, you know, if only four ships are passing through, you know, oil is going to be $150 in the spot market, like that relationship I can tell you. But in terms of what's likely to transpire, those are matters of political decisions. And those political decisions, like in some way, shape or form, are being influenced by macroeconomic considerations, but not really in an immediate time frame. And so and my guess is that anyone who tells you otherwise is full of shit because they probably have no edge in figuring out what's going on. And so what's probably more important in this environment is to start to think about, okay, if you don't have edge in predicting what's likely to transpire, then how can you trade markets by both recognizing that you have low confidence, meaning like you don't really know exactly how that's going to play out. And number two, where you might have, but what you might have edge in is understanding the second and third order consequences of the circumstances and the pricing that exists in the market. That's really where the opportunity
is. It's a great point, you know, because framing it like this, like having edge, I mean, probably hardly anyone does have edge when it comes to really knowing what's going on here, you know, because none of us is really there on the ground. I mean, you really have to be part of these military operations, I guess, if you really want to know what could potentially happen. So, I mean, that's a great way of framing it. I don't know, in terms of, you know, you mentioned the oil price, which is already sort of signaling this, you know, and now third order, second order effects that you mentioned. I mean, this could be a point where some people would say, well, I mean, the oil price, yeah, it might be signaling that we have some shortage going on there. But then at the same time, if you look at other prices, equity indices so far year to date, they're flat, you know, and they seem not to be that worried about these potential second order or third order effects coming. So are they just late to the party? Is the worst yet to come? Or like, yeah, when we zoom into these second order or third order effects, what could be coming and why are equity markets then not catching up? That would be one of my follow-up questions.
Bob, do you want to take that?
That one's all yours.
Okay.
Because that's the hard question.
Hey guys, I'm thrilled to share my new book, The Bitcoin Enlightenment, co-authored with Mexican billionaire Ricardo Salinas. Make sure you grab your copy now and learn about how one of the richest people in all of Latin America thinks about Bitcoin. You'll find the link in the show notes.
So I think, you know, when you kind of think through the reason the S&P 500 isn't down. So first off, like, we're not going to have an exact reason, right? Like, we don't have that exact like flow of like why it isn't down. You know, you could have had like a couple days of really big pension rebalancing clustered together and you get your 3% update. So that happens. But I think when you really kind of zoom out and think through, I think it's a matter of sequencing, right? Like, how does an oil shock go from an oil shock to perhaps like a big equity market drawdown, right? And typically how it goes is like you have the first order effect is as the oil shock happens, you kind of have these correlation based effects, right? So oil is up tremendously. That is a weight on stocks and bonds through the discount rate effect almost immediately, right? So that type of thing is something that is kind of like a relative value trade and also a very immediate repricing that's done by fast money players. And so that occurs within, you know, minutes to a day, you know, that type of thing. And that's what's really caused all the equity whipsaw. So if you've seen, equities have basically been negatively correlated to most of the oil moves, and so have treasuries, right? So the first order effect is that cross asset pricing effect, which is a lot of what you've seen. From there, you start to see the flow through of the of the oil shock into an inflation shock. So, you know, an oil price spike, if it happens over one day, it doesn't flow to consumers on that very same day. It slowly kind of makes its way into the economy and people begin to see it at the pump. Maybe they begin to see it in goods related to energy, things related to motor vehicles or places where oil is a very important input. It begins to flow into CPI. So that's the second, right? After you have that, that's when you begin to have kind of the demand response. So that's when consumers have to start making a choice of, oh my God, like gas prices are up X percent, you know, do I have to shift my, you know, my consumption in some way, or, you know, move some of my consumption from this basket to this basket. That's the third. And then finally, after that, you know, if you have a meaningful shift in demand in response to this inflation shock, that's when you start seeing the growth go down. And the growth growing down is what leads to the earnings re-rating, right? So you got to think through the way earnings expectations are kind of baked in by most analysts is on a bottom-up basis, right? What they're seeing on a bottom-up basis. And so they aren't always looking at these top-down macro drivers. And so once you start getting that earnings re-rating, that's when you start getting the consistent downward pressure on equities. And so when you think through that kind of, that's a long sequence, right? Like that's not something that happens in like a month. And so in some ways, you know, opportunistically, you know, for people like myself or Bob that are thinking through the opportunities and the linkages, I think that it's attractive to think through that equities may be mispriced. But in terms of looking at it and saying, why aren't equities down? I think that in some ways, it's a little bit natural that, hey, like we haven't had any bad data yet. There's no bad data. So you can't really expect the initial downside momentum in equities to really begin like that.
Particularly in a context where there's uncertainty about how quickly it'll resolve. Because of course, the equity market is pricing in a range of different probabilistic scenarios, meaning like there was some probability that that the administration was going to follow through on its rhetoric last week. And there's some probability that they weren't. And there's some probability that we'd get a deal in Islamabad this weekend. And there's some probability that we haven't. And there's some probability that it just gets resolved, you know, instead of at the meeting in Islamabad, it gets resolved, you know, quickly thereafter. And so I think part of that, part of what you're seeing is all of these folks weighing all these different probabilities in the short term and not, and in some ways, like that path that you just described, like, I mean, it takes forever. Like with people who have an attention span of like 12 minutes, like talking about like a multi-stage process that will take 6, 9, or 12 months to play out, it's just like not on people's minds. Like they just don't think about the world that way, even though that is absolutely right. That's a reality. That's how this sort of thing will play out. I think part of, again, if you come back to like, what can you trade? And even if you don't necessarily know exactly, for instance, whether there'll be a deal done immediately or not, start to think about the probability. So if you look at what's priced into the markets right now, let's say what's priced in the equity market, equities are actually up relative to bonds, meaning, you know, we were just talking about the discount rate effect, which is the first effect is that you have a discount rate, which is basically interest rates go up and that should bring down all asset prices. Well, actually, stocks are doing even better than that, which that essentially implies, think about stocks are just earnings over discount rates to oversimplify how stocks work. That actually means that people think that earnings are going to be stronger ahead than they did before the war started. Now, that's an unusual conclusion, a curious conclusion, let's say, to a 50%+ rise in oil prices, but a conclusion or a market pricing that exists nonetheless. When you look at that, you basically say, whether I'm looking at stocks or bonds or the dollar or most asset markets, like basically nothing's changed when we have this possibility. You know, it's possible this is transitory and it just, you know, gets resolved instantaneously. But certainly the probability that it doesn't and it has all these second and third consequences is non-zero. And so when you think about the sort of the skew that exists in the market, the skew of the possibilities, the market stocks in particular, and particularly stocks relative to bonds, are basically pricing in no chance that this will have any effect on the macro economy ahead. Well, I'll take the over of no chance, right? That's how you start to build, even though I don't necessarily know whether it'll be resolved, you can probabilistically think about what's the possibility. It's certainly non-zero that this thing drags on for 6, 9, 12 months, the path that, you know, was just described plays out. And so that's where you have to sort of think in an environment where you don't actually have edge in predicting the policy outcome.
Yeah, that's well said. I mean, yeah, because in the end, that's exactly my question. You know, I see so many people also maybe just rookies and people who haven't been in markets and are now pros like you guys, you know, trying to gain some edge, as you just described. by looking at price of equity markets, by looking at maybe also oil volatility and kind of figuring out, okay, you know, I see implied volatility is not up as much. And that's why I think there's some discrepancy when you compare it to spot prices and stuff like this. But then, as you on greatly said, I mean, it's this causal chain of things happening, you know, with the second and third and fourth order effect, and they can be lagging. And obviously, it's so hard to think about, when the next step will be on. And so that's kind of like what I'm trying to figure out, how to properly think about this, you know. And it's probably also that the thing that you mentioned, Bob, with the earnings, I mean, some companies will probably profit off of higher oil prices, you know, obviously. And that might be where some opportunities are, but not everyone obviously will equally profit. So yeah, maybe you guys have some thoughts on this as well.
I mean, I think that, you know, the case Bob has outlined, it makes sense for anybody who's trying to add value to a portfolio. Like, the way you're probably going to be able to add value to a portfolio, unless you're extremely reactive, right? So we do some of the stuff where we're trading, you know, various energy contracts and all that type of stuff. But you have to be immensely reactive to everything that's happening in the market. And you have to understand that space is extremely saturated. If you're trying to look at like calls queue versus spot and things like that, like, you are going to get eaten up because there are people that are sending people to the straight, you know, to actually try and figure out what's going on the ground. And they have best in class tech. They have absolutely no latency in the execution. Like, you're just not going to be able to do that. Maybe one of you out of the thousands of listeners, we can actually do that. But the thing is that trading the first order effect, which is the cross asset pricing, is really hard, right? Like that. There's edge there, but it's very hard for most people to get. It's the things that are going to be valuable to most portfolios is thinking through what we know is if these effects don't reverse. And I think that this is like a crucial thing. And I'm not sure whether Bob agrees on this or not. But I think that even if we get a de-escalation from here, what you need for us not to go through that sequence of events is you need to have we need to have a reversal of everything that's happened in oil prices. We don't need, like, if we stagnate from here, we're still going to have an inflationary pressure that's going to work its way through the supply chain, and we're still going to have to deal with all of those effects that I've outlined. So when you think through that and say, okay, if we don't have a reversal, we're going to have all of these effects. What are the downstream implications for my portfolio? And adjusting your allocations based on those potential downstream effects, I think that's where the most value is. And I think that, you know, one thing that's important to recognize is that, like, you're essentially betting on the linkages, right? You're betting on the linkages. And so you're getting compensated for taking on the risk that those linkages don't actually work in the way that I've outlined them. But when you make the cross-asset price bet immediately, you know the linkages because of the correlations are so tight. But that just means that there's a lower risk that those relationships don't work. And that's why people with a lot of fast money bet on those things more often. So I think that you have to accept that maybe the linkages don't work the exact way that we're describing. But that's the reason you might get compensated for, you know, making these bets in the future.